Welcome to Mac and Blue, the cutting-edge podcast for the nation's builders, merging the realms of construction with exciting advancements in technology. Join us on a thrilling journey where we delve into the dynamic world of blockchain, AI, the metaverse, virtual and augmented reality, and their transformative impact on the industry. Our engaging discussions span a wide spectrum, covering not only construction, economic development, supply chain, and market segments, but also exploring the vibrant tapestry of diversity within the construction landscape. We shed light on the intersection of local politics and its profound influence on the construction sector, while championing the remarkable contributions of women and minorities in construction. For all things Mac and Blue, head to www.macandblue.com and don't forget to subscribe on YouTube. I'm your host, JJ Levinsky. Now let's get into it.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Mac and Blue. I'm your host, JJ Levinsky, CEO and co-founder of Blue Wave General Contracting. Today, I'm lucky enough to have Matt Bergman, who's the CEO of Laketown Electric. And for those of you that say, who's Matt and who's Laketown Electric, never heard of him. For those that typically are regionally inclined to Arizona, Matt and I have known each other. I think we probably met 15 plus years ago.
Yeah.
And just to give a little background before I get into asking him questions and let him introduce himself is, Matt and I, we met through ABC. And for those of you that don't understand, we've had on our show here locally, ABC and AGC are combined in what's called the ABA here in Arizona, which is very unique. But in many other states, AGC is typically the union representation and ABC is typically the non-union representation of the different trade-based, general contracting, whatever, in various states. Even back when Matt and I met, the lines were already starting to get blurred between union and non-union. That isn't the point of our emphasis here, but just to give kind of the background of how Matt and I met. We were in different forum groups, different things within ABC. I know we were both pretty predominantly involved in some of the proactive safety things that were going on in ABC. So Matt's business is predominantly back then it was predominantly based in what I would call the southwest suburb of Minneapolis, the metro area. But we'll get into that a little bit deeper here. But just to give context of how Matt and I know each other, and I've been following him ever since I got to Arizona. And what he's been doing from a leadership perspective is nothing less than amazing. And I thought, hey, let's share a different perspective, a different story from a Midwestern company that I could rely on to help. And Matt, I'm kind of putting you on the pedestal of helping other tradesmen, tradeswomen in another part of the country. The challenges are not different, but yet there are some regional nuances that I think it'd be fun to just hear a different perspective from you today. So first of all, welcome.
Thank you. Really appreciate it, JJ. Good talking with you.
Yeah. Hey, give everyone a little bit of background. The family story is kind of cool.
Yeah.
You got thrown to the wolves.
Right, I did.
Literally. But again, for the readers, just knowledge, give a little bit of background to you, your father, the family, the company, all that.
Sure. So my dad started this company in 1975, and he was his story is really unique too. I mean, his parents died at a very young age. They died when he was like 13. And then he was raised by his neighbors. He was the odd man out of his family. He is a very self-made man. He put himself through school through Dunwoody Technical College. And then he became an electrician. By the time he was 21, he was a master electrician. And he started out on his own with Laketown Electric Corporation and based in Waconia, Minnesota, southwest Minneapolis, like 35 minutes. Right. I grew up, in the company probably from 12 years old on to 18, where I was working in the field, helping out during summers and pushing a broom and all that kind of thing, learning how to wire basic things. And then I went the more traditional route and went to college. I had my own career of sales and management, right? So I wasn't necessarily going to go into the trade, but then the recession hit. My dad called me in. He's like, "Hey, my customers are kind of drying up. Can you help me kind of revive this thing, knock on some doors?" We were a very different company then. We were like 12 employees, right? But it worked, and we started knocking on doors. And 2 years later, I got the company to about 20 people, and he died. He had a stroke on the beach. He was 60. Way too short of a life, right? So when you say throwing to the wolves, that's really what happened to me. I mean, I was writing my dad's eulogy and getting ready to prepare it and also coming up with a business plan to beg the bank to allow us to continue in business because we were down to the last $5,000 on our credit line. of
$5,000. Put that in perspective, $5,000.
And ownership went completely to my mom. I own nothing of the company at all. The bank could have very well just said, you're done. I don't trust this 27-year-old kid, right? But I convinced them enough to allow them that I had a plan in place to kind of chug back. So it took me, you know, it was really, really hard. And my brother was involved in the business at the time, and we bought the business from her in 2016. It took me 3 years to pay off that credit line. In 2018, we bought a business in Mankato called Jabin's Electric, which is also Lake Town Electric now. And my brother and I, we were 50-50 owners. We parted ways. He works in a engineering firm now. But it took a lot of hard work and not paying myself and people trusting in me and hiring people smarter than me in different ways. But now we're, you know, 130-person company, and you know, I think we've got some pretty special things going on here. So that's kind of a long-winded story, JJ.
But no, actually, you gave a Reader's Digest version that you could have spent an hour on that story alone. Matt, with that, let's break those down into a bunch of components, because there's many people that watch this podcast, listen to it. They're in our shoes. You and I, when I say our shoes as CEO owners, where, you know, there's weeks where you look and go, are we going to make payroll? And then there's other weeks where you're flush in the bank with a strong balance sheet and everything else. Sure. So that's a whole nother story. But let's go through some of the struggles and talk about what got you through those things and then what you learned from those.
Yeah.
So go ahead. Let's break down first and foremost, go down the leadership path. In other words, during those trying times, which you had multiple different trying times, whether it was, you know, dealing with your mom first, then dealing with your brother, that was on the personal side because, you know, it's a family business. Who did you go to for advice? Were you in formal business groups like YPO or EO or any of those, Vistage? And and talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, you know, first and foremost, my wife, she just really took a back seat to help me and give me the support that I absolutely needed. And she was a very successful person. She took a back seat when we had our children. So, you know, I have 9 and 7-year-old daughters that now she's just re-entering the workforce, and she runs 3 magazines. So she was my rock to know just how much time I had to put in and kind of my heart and soul and everything I had to keeping this thing afloat. I mean, especially when I had no equity whatsoever, I wanted to keep it afloat so my mom could prosper and have more money for retirement when we bought her out, right? I felt obligated to the longstanding employees. One of them I've known since I was 7 years old. He's still here. He's our smartest electrician, Eric. So I felt indebted to these people that their family's livelihood was now in my hands, and I had to deliver upon and convince everybody that I could do this, which I think I did win over the crew because they've known me for so long, right? We're a very different company now than what it was, but that was just, it was incredibly hard. I, you know, thanks to my support system and my mom and my brother at the time, you know, we got through it.
So you, Matt, you defined the internal piece and you gave kudos to your wife and your mom and everything else, but what about external, you know, the chumps, like, let's say it was me that, you know, it wasn't, but who were the people you gleaned on in the marketplace?
Yeah. So I have been in Vistage for 7 years.
Okay.
I was also part of a CEO group. It was called CEO Solutions, which is now a defunct, but I've always been able to lean on people in that way. And I felt like I was kind of on an island, but I've luckily my dad was a very well networked guy and I have a lot of people that I could kind of lean on, but I could lean on people for advice, but they couldn't actually do it for me, right? So I kind of had to just go to the school of hard knocks and figure it out.
What when you quote unquote won the employees over? Mm-hmm. What were some of the changes like when you took over from your father? What were some of the changes that you instilled in them as far as that? How do I describe it? Like the servant leadership model, or how did you approach mixing up your management style or staff?
Well, I would say my dad was a pretty grizzled Harley riding tough guy with a really soft heart. I don't have as hard of an exterior shell as what he does. So I'm probably a pretty big softy, and I've always, you kid has a ball game. You got to absolutely get out of work and go to it. Your kid is sick, go home and take care of your family. So I instilled that, the family first mentality for my people, where they just absolutely knew that I'm personally invested and I personally care about what they have going on in their families and their unique situations. So they knew that I had their back. They knew that we were successful in winning kind of more exciting contracts, versus before it was really a service-based company and just repeat business that would come rolling in. But we had different revenue streams, so they knew that I was going to work incredibly hard to make sure that they always had work year-round, right? And there's some contractors up in Minnesota that's maybe different than where you're at now, JJ. They don't care if they lay people off. And they're like, well, it's wintertime, so we'll just kind of figure it out. For me, I care deeply. I feel sick if I don't have work for people year-round, like it's no different. And we only had like a foot of snow this year, but last year we had 75 inches, right? So,
For that, can you imagine if we laid off our workforce because it got 120 degrees? It doesn't matter. Right.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, we just work through it.
Yeah.
Hey, so you brought, I don't know if you realize it, but you brought up something I think that would be nice to talk about. So go back to, unfortunately when your dad passed away, and then in between there, when you kind of came in with that sales and marketing thing, that diversification, how were you able to, what did you do or what inspiration can you give to other, people that own trade companies like you of mixing up their market share or going after, I want to be careful here because sometimes diversification can be a detriment, whereas, you can't have all your eggs in one basket too. So what was the magic mix for you and how and why did you do that?
Yeah. So what I looked for, seeking out customers that shared the same values that we did. So people that value relationships, that don't just look at a number. We're never the cheapest guy in town, but they see value and they appreciate working with people with like-minded, abilities and what matters to them. So I was looking for hospitality contractors that would negotiate their work, that would not send it, value relationships, that would maybe have us bid against two or three other people at most, right? If we were just a number to somebody that just blasts out a public bid to everybody, we weren't going to win that work. Somebody that wins that work typically makes the most mistakes or is the least experienced. So I knew I had to get people that we were doing repeat business in spaces that also care about the way it looks. They care that the conduits are clean, that it can't be hidden behind a wall. They care that the lighting controls work. They care that the gear is clean. And they take some pride with their end result versus just slapping it together, right?
And so what after that then, let's say that was the catalyst, Matt, on the hospitality. What did that then spawn in, what I'm getting at is Laketown 2.0 or 3.0? Yeah. How did that lead to different business different vertical integration, if you will?
Yeah. So it led to, so my dad was always a big proponent of design build. So I also looked for people that we could negotiate and offer kind of the best value solutions to. So that, that went into the industrial space, into people that make, manufacturing and food processing and things like that. Also led to a lot of design build charter work, charter school work that we've done. And then when we finally got our balance sheet in check and got big enough, we did start to chase after some of the really large bonded public jobs because it kind of gets rid of the riffraff bidder, so to speak. That's been a success for us too. We don't chase after everything, but there's certain ones that might pique our interest. Like we're really good at ground up schools from, 10,000 square feet to 300,000 square feet. Like our biggest project is about a $10 million school right now on the electrical side. So that's been a success for us too.
No, good. What, as you went into more of those verticals, Matt, what was, what did you do with Lake Town as far as the guys and the gals, as far as the training? Like, how did that, how, let the audience know, like, what did it look like when you only had 12 people to now 135, the back of the house? What does it look like?
Yeah, completely different from how it was there. We at that time did not pay for apprenticeship training. Now every single person that wants to become an apprentice will pay for 4 years of electrical association training for them, as well as their books. We'll also pay for, we just started paying for all the continuing ed for all of our journey worker electricians. So we've spent a ton more money and resources. And what I've really found, a journey worker electrician is so incredibly hard to find. You're going to find the guys that will hop for a buck in a truck, so to speak. You don't want those people. You're so much better off to start with a clean slate, invest in them, don't have them sign anything, promising that they're going to pay you back, which if I wanted to get political, the union will make them sign something and make them pay them back, right? But that way you have your own people. They don't have any bad habits. They know that you've put your faith in them, so they want to reciprocate and be loyal to you. And if they leave, what's the worst thing that we did? We bettered the industry and got somebody to journey worker electrician so that they can create a better living for their family. I guess that's okay too, right? We're going to need that regardless. There's like four people retiring for every one to replace them. So we have to invest in our people. We have to do everything we can to advance the industry and work smarter and not harder, right?
Novel concept.
Yeah. It's not as backbreaking as what – it's going to get less and less backbreaking, I think, right?
What – okay, so I don't know if there was – talk to me about – I'm trying to pose a question here because going from – uh-oh.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're all good. He's back.
My dog was scratching at my conference
room. No, you're all good. I was like, yeah, we're lost. We already offended Matt. He's off the podcast.
Right.
What, describe the different levels, because you're at 135 now. Describe the different levels of, because we're on this kind of human capital as far as
right.
Attract, retain. I think you did a good job of explaining the retention, which a lot of people would argue, hey, Matt, that's pretty giving. You're putting a lot of faith and a lot of investment in a return on investment that you have no guarantees. Like you said, right. You're not making him sign a repayment clause or any kind of contract or anything mm-hmm. like that. It's pretty ballsy and pretty gutsy, but you also believe in your system.
I do.
With that though, where were the different pain points as far as the growth are concerned? And if you can describe like when you got to one of them, like, I don't know, hey, and maybe it's a magic number, like 50 employees. And then all of a sudden, hey, we had to do X, Y, and Z. Because a lot of people that watch and listen to this are going, Matt, give me some advice. What are those landmines that are coming for my growth?
You know, in a business like ours, so there's some simple economics that seem to make sense in my business. At least this is for the project mix of stuff that we do. So typically a project manager can handle about 15 electricians man hours, if you will, and manage a book of business. Now, it's not... Some people might manage your $10 million projects. Some will only manage your special projects or that sort of thing. So we would add a project manager. So when we hit 25 people, it was originally my brother, myself, and my executive vice president, Andy. And we had a three-person office, right, and a bookkeeper. And that's all we had. And when we added a project manager, when we hit 25 guys, I mean, he was literally working on the table of the kitchen. We didn't have an office for him. And then 2 years later, we added on, I think, six offices here. And then I had to have a controller, right? Because it just was madness, all the bookkeeping. I mean, I spent so much of my time doing accounting work early on that I should be out there selling, right? And I should be trying to get more customers. But instead, I was in the weeds so darn bad, right? Mm-hmm. And then I added another project manager and a project coordinator. And, you know, up until a few years ago, we didn't even have a general foreman, right? So it's just, I feel pinch points, and we've kind of, it's been calculated on how we've done this, but sometimes we are flying by the seat of our pants, right?
But what business owner hasn't done that, right?
Absolutely. Completely. So, But 25 is where I really started to feel like, okay, this is getting kind of serious, like doing million plus dollar jobs and, you know, adding on to buildings, building new buildings for our facility. We, 2 years ago, we just converted the last bit of a warehouse in our office to offices, open air offices, and that's filling up pretty quick too. So where it really goes from here, I don't know, but you know, we just hired a drafter. We just brought back a foreman to make him into a project manager. So, but that 15 number on the project manager operational side seems to ring true. That's not always exactly that, but that seems to be what I've found, at least in our industry.
There comes a time when dreams become a reality, when you see your vision materialize into a true work of art. And the only way to get there is to choose a general contractor who shares that same vision and knows how to bring it to life. At Blue Wave, we aren't so big that we've forgotten where we've come from, and we aren't so small that we can't care for your projects regardless of their size. When your vision deserves safety, perfection, timeliness, and expertise in order to become a reality, trust Blue Wave to get it done right the first time.
Now, you mentioned design build. You talked about your brother going to an engineering company. Have you brought engineering back in-house at all, or are you still just doing that in a partnership type atmosphere?
Have not, but one of our most recent hires, he's a Dunwoody graduate from electrical construction and design. The dean of the college basically handpicked him for me and said, you got to talk to this guy, right? Because I go and talk to the Dunwoody students when they allow me in. And he just kind of fits our culture. He feels like a Lake Town guy.
Yeah.
So he graduated the 2-year program. He's still going to school to get his engineering degree at Dunwoody. And it's like it's the perfect scenario and perfect timing because we will absolutely be ready at that point for him to continue on and become a PE.
If anyone from Dunwoody management is watching this, make sure you do a second background check on Matt. I don't think you'll want him back there again.
Yeah. Right.
I'm just kidding. No, that I love those stories. So because again, it goes back to the culture piece that you were talking about is those people at Dunwoody wouldn't have done that had you not earned their trust, their admiration, their respect for what you guys have done. So kudos to you. Hey, sign behind your head there, the Inc. 5000. Yeah. You know, I know you're too humble to brag about it, but do it anyway. What does that mean to you? What does that mean to you, and what has it meant to your team as far as? What does that signify?
Yeah, so Inc. 5000, you know, 5000 fastest growing private companies in the nation. You do have to apply. So are we the 5000? I don't know. We were the 5000 that applied, and we had at least pretty substantial growth, right? Whereas at least 40%, and we achieved it 7 times. So I think in year number 4, I brought my team down there with me, and we just had a blast. I mean, we just celebrated.
Where was that at?
That was Scottsdale, JW.
Okay. Oh, good. You came down to the hood here.
I did. Yeah. It was nice down there. I want to come again soon.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Has it done anything to the I mean, yes, it draws credibility, but then what has it done culturally to the organization?
Well, I think it makes Lake Town an aspirational place to go to, knowing that we're not just sitting idle and coasting. It always feels like we've got our foot on the gas towards some new endeavor or, you know, market or something that we're chasing. So people can... when they look at our company as a potential landing spot, as a place to work, they can know that we have ambitions here and we're trying to better ourselves and grow and create more opportunities and more career paths for people versus, quite honestly, in our space in the merit shop world and the electrical side, there's not really anybody else that is hitting the gas pedal like we are, at least locally, right? I think people just get kind of complacent. For me, my wife and I are both people that can't really sit still. We're never complacent. We always want to do something new and exciting and you know, kind of grow our die mentality, but also focusing on the bottom line and what we've really been focusing on lately is culture and making this the best landing spot for people to thrive and, you know, do well in their careers.
What specifically are you focusing on now within the culture aspect? Mm-hmm. Is it processes, is procedure? Like what, you know, I mean, you don't have to give away any trade secrets, but at the same token, everyone's like, Matt, what are you doing? You got a popcorn machine in the lobby or what is it? I know it means more than that, but yeah, I have to get literal with you to get figurative.
I'll give you a couple of examples that I think are a wonderful thing for anybody to do in a construction business or otherwise. One is my Vistage membership has brought me incredibly great speakers that some really connect more than others. I know you're a Vistage member too, right, JJ?
I mean, I'm no longer, but I still advocate and support for it naturally.
Yep. So we had a particular speaker that was called CultureWise. So we developed 20 fundamental behaviors that are unique and kind of like our secret sauce of what's important about being a Lake Town employee. And then we send out a behavior a week, and then we get nominations from the field, and then we recognize the people that were nominated by who and why. And then they get a gift card, or they get $100 to give to their favorite 501c3 or worthy cause, right? So that's just a way that people are ingrained in recognizing each other and giving appreciation and thanks. I met with our top field leaders in our Southern Minnesota market and the Twin Cities market. And I was looking for a way that, you know, people, I heard a comment once and it really stuck with me. They're like, why are you giving a $5,000 bonus to recruit a journey worker electrician? What the hell do I get for being here? You know, I'm like, boy, I must be doing kind of a bad job as a leader if that's kind of the feedback that I get. But you know what? He was right. He was right. So I was trying to find unique and different ways that we can incentivize people for wanting to run the bigger jobs, to get a bonus and bump in pay without having to ask for it, for them to earn an extra vacation day, for them to get money towards their boots, for them to get a bigger tool allowance. And, you know, for them to have leadership development days or additional training as they see fit that they've wanted to do. So I took everything that they were asking me for and we put it into a plan to do just that, incentivize people for their longevity and loyalty to the company. And I also have taken the mystery out of how do you get promoted here? Well, is it like politics or is it favoritism? Or no, actually, I probably can't see this, but I have a career path that it says how big a job you have to run, how many you have to do to be successful there. And then you have to be a large project foreman for a couple of years before you're in the pool of potential project manager candidates. But then it takes the mystery out of who internally can apply and how can they actually get there with set metrics in place.
So without patronizing you, you've already done more than most by putting that into a plan. Do you then, have you put metrics to it as far as like KPIs or anything so that people can be measured against it, or are you still working on that?
I do not have it completely dialed in right now. It's pretty rudimentary metrics where it's, you know, some foreman can only run a $250,000 electrical job, and mm-hmm. They would just be like a chicken with its head cut off on a $5 million electrical job. So those are the metrics that tell me what they're capable of and how many people they can lead. And, you know, these bigger jobs, they might take several foremen, but they'd have one person overseeing all of it.
Got it.
Yeah.
Hey, during the struggle that was 2020 and supply chain, what were you guys able to do differently or better than the competition to keep you either at pace or above pace of the competition? Was there anything that you guys were able to do culturally that put you in an advantage? Or did you just struggle like everybody else?
Yeah, I think we struggled like everybody else. But what we did do is we didn't know if what exactly was going to happen with us. So we were very aggressive on funded projects that we knew that would be funded and not fall through. So we made concerted efforts to do publicly funded work that we knew that would, continue, because quite honestly, a lot of developers were not sure what they were going to do, if they're going to spend or if they're going to wait or what, right? We also did batch together some project buys on commodity purchases and, you know, big lighting and gear packages as well.
Would imagine.
Yeah. What, so but I mean, quite honestly, I think everybody took a pretty big hit just inflation wise on fixed price contracts. So we've also put in contract language as well to help us, you know, we'll keep prices for 15 days. It can't be an open-ended, keep it open forever, because the way, I mean, pipe and wire went up double, right? So, yeah, I mean, I think we had our struggles just like everybody else, but we tried to be as mindful as we could.
What, over the last few years, what would you say, did you change up your new construction versus service percentage? Have you kept it balanced, or are you, which way are you?
You can always use more service work. That's going to keep your lights on and have that recurring revenue. So a couple of things that we did. We have a service that will call on industrial facilities, and they're like calling on behalf of Lake Town Electric, and they'll set up sales appointments for us for people that may not need our services today, but they might be adding a machine, or they might be reconfiguring a line of their plant, or upgrade their lighting or whatever, right? So that has helped us. But new construction values probably skew it where, you know, we're about 20% service, 80% new construction and remodels. Okay. Yeah, I could always use, I wish it was 50-50, then, you know, things would be really great, but it's hard to get there.
Got it. I was thinking of another question based on that. My sum timer's kicked in. I forgot what I was going to ask you.
no problem.
It was something. Yeah, it'll come back to me. Yes.
Yeah.
In your growth, because again, I'm speaking down here, Matt. Just about every owner of every company down here, if they're somewhat successful in MEP or roofing or the trades, you got private equity knocking on your door every day, or strategics trying to buy you out. Are you getting the same phone calls?
Yes.
Like, and
daily, you know, I mean, I've got a long ways to go in this business.
Right.
I'll be 42 this summer. I'm not looking to jump ship or get out. Right.
Right. Because you own 100% of it now, correct?
I do. Yeah.
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 So now, not to be the hip, not to challenge you or, you know, throw hypocrisy your way, don't be your dad. You know, what do you and your wife talk about as far as the legacy and the exit strategy and things like that? Like, how are you structuring your succession plan then?
Yep. You know, a couple of my friends have gone into ESOPs lately, and I think that's something that I could strongly consider. I think it fits in with kind of the culture of Lake Town, so there's potentials for that. I've also got some potential leaders in the wings that I think would have interest in stepping up as well. I mean, there's a lot of I haven't figured that out completely yet. And, you know, could I get bored with this business and decide in 10 years that it's not for me? That's possible too. But for right now, I'm having fun, and there's still plenty of opportunity, and there's still plenty of market share for us to gather in the Twin Cities. I believe that we're going to be a $100 million business. You know, we did a little over 40 last year within 5 years. So that would make us like the fifth or sixth largest electrical contractor in the Twin Cities, for sure the largest merit shop contractor in the Twin Cities, which I believe that we are already in terms of vertical building contractors. Not solar will skew it, and we don't really do that. That's kind of cowboy work, I would say.
But you've already,
you know,
but
it looks great opportunity for us.
Yeah, so. You expanded outside the footprint of Minneapolis already. Yeah. I mean, you did the acquisition to the, again, for Mankato, the audience sake, Mankato's in southern Minnesota, and you're working in northern Iowa, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so,
Rochester too.
Yeah, that was strategic. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's potentials. I mean, I also look at businesses coming for sale, which I've done it both ways. I bought a business I started organically, and for what the multiples are in our industry, you know, usually it's 8+ times EBITDA on a 3-year roll. You almost might be better off sitting up shop, because when I bought the business in Mankato, it wasn't all that I thought it would be.
Go deeper on that, Matt, because a lot of people want to hear this story. So if you don't mind, let down your veil a little bit and speak candidly about that.
Yeah. So I feel like I was sold a bill of goods that wasn't necessarily true. You know, the owner agreed to stay on for a year. And I said, the only thing I really want out of you is I am the outsider coming into this market and people are going to think I'm a city boy. Right. Yep. They're going to say, oh, this guy from Minneapolis is now in our market. I want you to bring me to your important stakeholders and customers and introduce me strongly and let them shake my hand and say, this company is in good hands with Matt coming and taking over. And here's why. Here's what happened, though. He was not willing to do that once after the deal was done. He was not willing to do that. So, some of his employees that are just incredible leaders in the field that we have down there are still with us. We had to get rid of some bad eggs. We had to get rid of an entitled son from the owner that also was not all he said he was. Turns out that was really good to move on there too. We basically had to start over. I thought I was going to keep the name of the business we bought, and then I realized – I'm not really helping myself by keeping this name. We got to make this Lake Town Electric as one unit so that people know that the problems that they had with the past ownership, they're gone now, right? We operate differently and we operate based on relationships and trust and doing what we say we're going to do and that kind of thing, right? So looking back on it, I don't regret it because it was a very good market to get into. But we kind of had to recreate the wheel a little bit down there. So I would just say for anybody that's looking to buy, what are you buying? Are you buying the employees? Are you buying something that you can't go off and open up an office and end up hiring their employees because they find out that you have a better mousetrap than what they do anyways? So be careful about overpaying versus going out on your own and trying to start organically is what I would say.
Good lessons. Yeah, because a lot of people are forced with that right now. You've been through it, but a lot of people that haven't, when they start, you're right. When you start getting 8, 9, 10 multiples across your table and you've never seen that kind of money before, it's a pretty big carrot dangled in front of your face, you know?
It absolutely is. And I swear that had to have doubled or tripled from where it was a couple of years ago.
Because
when I did in 2018, it was nowhere close to that. Not even close. So it's going to reclaim that too, right?
Yeah. Especially with MEP though, you look at like us as a general contractor, you're lucky if you have 3.5, 4 multiple, but like in Texas right now, there's HVAC companies that are getting 12, 14, 15, especially if they have recurring revenue models. It's like punching the lottery ticket. So, but you bring up some good points and I'm glad you shared that. Hey, I remember what the question was going to be.
Yeah.
And most people know this that watch or listen to this. Are you strictly still electrical, or have you gone into, let's say, division 27 and 28, any low voltage controls, life safety, things like that? I think a lot of people would want to know did you do any diversification there, Matt?
Well, we still end up subbing it a lot of it out. We will do your basic fire alarm and your low voltage cabling, but when it depends how sticky and stagnant the specs are. If they need, a specific fire alarm or they need a specific intercom system or that's when it gets challenging. And I have had conversations with people and looking at starting our own where we can do kind of more things.
Especially in healthcare.
There's good and bad for it. There's no guarantee that it's going to work either if we do it. And quite honestly, I like a lot of the partners that we hire on the low voltage side. And, I don't think we're losing jobs because we don't have low voltage. Could we make more money? I'm sure we could if we did more of it ourselves. But
there's the flip side.
I don't like doing things that we're not experts at. We might fail doing it. So I know that I can trust our partners and we can still deliver a really good product that way.
There comes a time when dreams become a reality, when you see your vision materialize into a true work of art. And the only way to get there is to choose a general contractor who shares that same vision and knows how to bring it to life. At Blue Wave, we aren't so big that we've forgotten where we've come from, and we aren't so small that we can't care for your projects regardless of their size. When your vision deserves safety, perfection, timeliness, and expertise in order to become a reality, trust Blue Wave to get it done right the first time.
All right, let's take a tangent. Let's go into your personal life and the your big hunting, fishing guy.
I mean, come on,
we're Midwest guys.
Yeah.
Let the audience know about your other little dream that came true, your side hustle. Give us the backstory.
I'll give you some backstory. So I had a very unique I had a lot of unique internship opportunities when I was at St. John's. One was I worked for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and I was a MinAqua intern. So I taught inner city kids and at-risk kids about the outdoors and how to fish. So that was a pretty cool job. That led to me getting a job with Ron Shera, who's a well-known Midwest outdoors person, right? And I put on his Minnesota-bound traveling fishing clinics for 2 summers.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. So,
so you and Laura grew up together, basically.
I didn't really know her too well, but and then my last gig was I was an editorial intern for a defunct magazine called North American Fisherman, which is the biggest freshwater fishing publication in the world.
Oh.
Upon graduation, I was offered to be an associate editor there, and I just said, now, big picture, paint this for me, right? How much can I make doing this? And they're like, well, you know, maybe you could make like $80,000, and in 5 years, you're going to have your own fishing show. And I said, well, that's just not going to work for me. And they said, well, nobody's ever told us no before. And I'm like, well, I'm telling you, no, I love to fish, but not that much, right? So I'm going to go the business route. So I tabled that and went the business route. And, you know, I'm still nuts about the outdoors. I have a hunting dog that comes with me to work every day. And that's a passion of mine, bird hunting. And fishing has always been a passion. So, my friends and I, he created this rattle reel that you hang on the side of an ice shack. So when a fish bites in the middle of the night, there's bells in it that'll go off.
Which is all legal.
Archaic and weird for, you know, most of your audience in Arizona, but ice fishing is kind of
a big deal. You got to remember, half the audience down here is transplants from up there.
Snowbirds and transplants, right? So they probably get it. And then, so we got our patent on that rattle reel 5 months ago. And then we started getting into custom handmade ice fishing rods and open water rods.
Really?
Yep. So we make those right where my headquarters is of my building here. I don't make them, but I can sell them. And I have people in the industry and connections with retailers and direct to customers to sell them. So, you know, it's our goal to sell 4,000 to 5,000 ice rods next year and get into some pretty big retailers. That'll make us one of the larger ones around in 2 years' time.
Just need better winter conditions.
We need some better winter conditions. It's a good thing we're making open water rods. I mean, you could use that stuff in Arizona too, right? And it's what we're striving for is that we believe that people should be able to afford a made-by-hand rod, not in a factory in China, made here for a more reasonable price. So like our $350 open water rod is going to be as good as a $600 to $700 G Loomis.
Nice.
Not better. So that's our goal, is to make some profit on it, but be reasonable and get our name out there and continue to develop.
How many partners do you have in that?
I've got two.
Two? And what's been the key to key marketing to that component?
Can you repeat that? I just had a little connection problem.
What's been the key marketing component of that business, Matt?
Mm-hmm. Oh, the marketing component?
Yeah. What's been the key? Is it just organic trade shows, the word of mouth?
I mean, we've done some trade shows, but it's social media and it's word of mouth. And we're going to focus on corporate fishing rods. So like you'd have to order 25, but you could get them in your logo and your colors of the thread and that kind of thing. So that's been a catalyst for us to sell larger quantities.
Say you it made me think of something when you were talking social media. You were talking about how back to Dunwoody, your guest speaker there and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
You know, we've spent so much time on this podcast talking about human capital, the advocacy of the trades. I think we've beaten it pretty hard down here in the desert Southwest. Yeah. I imagine it's no different than in the upper Midwest too. And with that, what have been the more recent success stories up there as far as how they're advocating for the trades more and more?
Yeah. I mean, it's the mindset has really changed. I think it was the guidance counselor that would say, don't be an electrician unless you want to dig ditches the rest of your life. Right.
Right.
Well, here's the deal. I mean, I'm a huge advocate for the trades, and every time I'm at a networking event and people are like, oh, my son was thinking of this, or his friend was, I said, whether you come and talk to me or not, I'm like, I will guide them through it. I know people in different trades. If you want to go and experience it, I think it's such a great thing. And here's the deal. I mean, the young people that decide to enter the trades and, you know, go off to be a carpenter, a general contractor, or whatever it might be, their education is usually paid for by a company like mine, right? They will not have any debt, and they can work while they're in trade school. Or if they were a good, hardworking farm kid and they just maybe didn't have an opportunity to go to trade school, we can also start them with no experience either. It can go both ways, right? But they're going to laugh all the way to the bank when their buddies come out of these liberal arts colleges with $50,000 a year loans, right? That is going to take them forever to pay it off.
Spoken from a guy that went to a liberal arts college, by the way.
I went to St. John's. That was one of the problems, right? St. John's in Minnesota. But in retrospect, I mean, I got good business experience there, but how would my life have been different if I would have went to trade school? I think I'm pretty much the same guy that I was.
Thank God St. Ben's.
Rugby.
Yeah, thank God St. Ben's was close. So that you.
Yeah, right.
Hey Matt, what haven't I asked you? What are you trying to get out to the marketplace or people that'll listen to your bantering and hogwash that comes out of your mouth? Seriously, you know what I mean? It's like, what haven't I asked you that, you know, put yourself on the pulpit for a minute and just talk to our audience about either your business, your trade, you know, what's your call to action for all of us?
Yeah. My call to action is, one of my passions as I look at things is just being an advocate for the trades. And I would just strongly, strongly encourage, if you know anyone that is looking to do it, to give it a serious look. Like I said, the biggest misnomer that people have about the trades is that you're just going to go and you're going to pull wire or dig ditches, right? But there are legitimate paths for you to be your own boss someday, for you to, you know, run crews, for you to go into a sales role or owner's rep, or it's just so many different things. So I want that mindset to change, right? So that's really important to me. Also, I started, there's a group that me and some friends started called Purpose Driven Coffee. So I think this is kind of a neat thing for people to do it. I love being surrounded by other people that think civically and our service base, that, you know, aren't afraid to volunteer the hours at the Lions Club or pick up a shift doing this or help out at a shelter kind of thing, right? I think so many people have gotten away from that it's becoming a problem. People, they put themselves first as opposed to being servant leaders and servant minded. So that's important to me. And I feel like whenever I surround myself with the people that align with me on those values, the more good that we do together. And we look to be selfless helpers. There's nothing worse than when you go to the networking event and somebody just starts selling you, right? Just get out of my face. Like,
such a turnoff, isn't it?
Yeah. They're like, you know, you should really have me be a speaker at your next event, Matt. It's like, if you ask me to be your speaker, I'm not going to ask you to be our speaker at the Purpose Driven Coffee event. It's like, it's just, some people just really only care about themselves, but if you just put yourself aside and worry about helping others, it'll come back around for you, right? So that's just something that's really important for me. And I learned that from my dad, because he was the town Santa Claus and the Lions Club president, involved with the Rotary and a Sunday. He was a confirmation teacher for 20 years, and he taught Sunday school. And I mean, he was just a selfless giver, right? And everybody knew Dave. And if I can try to live my life, you know, even
be like Dave,
even partially the way my dad is, I think I'm doing good and I'm doing the right things, right?
On that, I think let's wrap it up. I just want to thank you for being on today, Matt. And inspiring story about how you were thrown to the wolves, took over in a pretty dire situation from what your father had left. And I give you nothing but kudos and chops for what you've done. And thanks for sharing the story. This reaches a lot of people up in your neck of the woods too. But
for sure.
With the cross contamination, but just thanks for speaking to another audience down here about your experiences.
Yeah. It's a pleasure chatting with you and getting caught up too.
Yeah. Thanks again.
And I'm gonna come check out some of your sites when I go down and see my niece at parents weekend at ASU. I'll make a little road trip and see what you got.
Good. We'll get together then.
For sure.
You've been listening to the Mac and Blue Show, brought to you by Blue Wave General Contracting. Be sure to subscribe to the Mac and Blue podcast on your favorite podcast platform. Follow JJ Levinsky on LinkedIn and Instagram. Tune in every Monday